Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, the unscripted show that celebrates unsung heroes, myth busts historical lies, and rediscovers the forgotten stories that changed our world. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Hi, everyone. Welcome to one of those in-between episodes where I answer any question you have about history. Today's question comes from Eric Crawford, and his is, what lesson can we learn about nation building from the Kurds? Fascinating question. Now, the Kurds, if you don't know them, they're an ethnic group that live in southeastern Turkey, northern Iraq, and Syria. They've been there for time immemorial. In the past, ethnographers claimed that they were the descendants of the Medes of the Medo-Persian Empire, but that's a little bit hazy. We're not really sure. Anyway, they're one of the largest stateless ethnic groups on Earth. They, as you know, suffered a fair amount under the Saddam Hussein regime in Iraq and were frequently bombed, and they're one of the main groups that are fighting ISIS in northern Iraq today, the Peshmerga forces that are being armed by different groups such as the United States. Well, this is a fascinating question because they are a people who have tried throughout history to build a nation but do not have one today. Well, rather than me answer it, I would like to turn it over to a friend of mine named Jean Bajalan. We did our master's studies together in Istanbul. He is from the UK and of Kurdish background and does research on the Kurdish peoples. Went to Oxford for his PhD and now a tenure-track professor in Missouri. Can't think of anyone more qualified to answer this, so I'm going to turn it over to him.
Hello, my name is Jean Bajalan, and I am an assistant professor in history at Missouri State University, located in Springfield, Missouri. So I'm a historian of the Middle East, and I focus specifically on the history of the Middle East's Kurdish community. Now, Scott has asked me to answer a question that was submitted, which is, what can the Kurdish case tell us about nationalism? Well, this is a great question and a really extensive question, a question which can be answered in a lot of different ways. And something really that we could talk for hours about, but I guess you all don't have hours to discuss Kurdish nationalism. So I'm going to give you one specific way in which Kurdish nationalism and the story of the Kurds can tell us something about nationalism more generally. So let me begin by saying that the Kurdish question and Kurdish politics is usually conceived of as your typical question of national self-determination, at least to Kurds and supporters of the Kurdish movement. What I mean by this is that the Kurdish question, the political difficulties facing the Middle East Kurdish community, are basically understood as being caused by the Kurds' lack of a state, more specifically, lack of a nation state. Sometimes Kurds are referred to as a stateless people. Now, this is a little bit misleading because most Kurds in the Middle East possess citizenship of one of those countries in which the Kurds live, whether that's Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Syria. So, you know, a lot of Kurds have passports from those countries, but statelessness can be understood in another way, in that the Kurds are somehow outsiders within those states they reside. Iraq and Syria are Arab states, Turkey is a Turkish state, and Iran is a state for the Persians. Now, of course, governments in Iraq, Turkey, and Iran and Syria have tried to play with those definitions, have tried to, at times, include the Kurds within their definition of the nation. However, generally speaking, the Kurds have had a problematic relationship to what we might call the official national identity of the countries within which they reside. So, returning to our Kurdish nationalists and the supporters of the Kurdish nationalist movement, their understanding of the Kurdish question is that it is caused by the occupation of Kurdish lands by foreigners, by outsiders, and that the Kurdish question will be resolved when the Kurds get their own homeland, whether that is a unified homeland including all the different parts of Kurdistan, whether that's, you know, those Kurdish inhabited areas of Turkey, of Iraq, of Syria, of Iran, whether those will be brought together into a single state, or each of the different parts of Kurdistan will enjoy its own statehood. And this is kind of an irrelevant question. This is kind of a side point. But yeah, we have this idea that national self-determination and independence for the Kurds will solve the question. And I think that's a lot of that's the way a lot of people in the West, West look at it. But if we look at the history of the Kurdish movement a little bit more closely, we discover that nationalism, and more specifically the desire for one's own nation state, has not always been the core political impulse behind the Kurdish movement. It certainly has been at points. In Turkey, for example, the Sheikh Said Revolt of 1924-1925, the Khoibun Revolt of the 1930s, and more recently, the rise of the Kurdistan Workers' Party in the 1970s. These were all movements which advocated Kurdish self-rule. For example, the Kurdistan Workers' Party, better known as the PKK, at its founding in the late 1970s, called for the creation of a united, independent and socialist Kurdistan, a Kurdistan which would not only encompass territory within Turkey, but also all those neighboring states within which the Kurds reside. However, has the quest for a state always been the main concern of the Kurdish movement? I would say no. If we look throughout the modern history of the Kurds, we see different expressions of the Kurdish political identity. For example, prior to the end of the Ottoman Empire, a growing number of Kurdish intellectuals became interested in the national question and in the development of the Kurdish community. However, they saw the development of the Kurdish communities not in terms of creating a nation state, but rather in terms of advancing the community socially and economically. Basically, a kind of the idea that the Kurds are a community living within the broader Ottoman society, and they can achieve national development within the boundaries of the Ottoman Empire, i.e. the separatist political argument, the idea that the only solution to the Kurdish question is independence, was not the dominant perspective of Kurdish intellectuals during this period. Now, it's not only in the lead up to the end of the Ottoman Empire that we see this kind of accommodationalist approach to the Kurdish identity, the idea that the Kurds can achieve their achieve national self-determination, can achieve national development outside of the framework of having their own nation state. In Turkey in the 1960s, most Kurdish intellectuals focused not on the quest for Kurdish statehood, but rather the social and economic development of Turkey's Kurdish provinces. They focused on social and economic development related issues rather than issues pertaining to autonomy and independence. Even in Iraqi Kurdistan, which has seen one of the most violent and sustained Kurdish movements in the 20th century, dating back to the early 1960s and culminating in 1991 with the successful Kurdish uprising against Saddam Hussein, the Kurdish movement there has been of two minds about independence. Some Kurdish political leaders may have preferred independence, but for political expediency, regarded it as not a very realistic prospect, and thus pushed for autonomy. Other groups, for example, particularly in the 1960s and 70s, those on the political left, hoped that Kurdish national self-determination could be achieved within the boundaries of Iraq in the form of an Arab-Kurdish federation in which the two ethnic groups would be represented equally and fairly. Even today, as we push forward and look at Iraqi Kurdistan, which today there was an announcement, and the date is, of course, the 6th of June, there was an announcement by the Kurdish government that there would be a referendum of relating to independence in Iraqi Kurdistan. Well, this is an extremely interesting development. And of course, it looks like the majority of Kurds in Iraq will vote for independence. But there are a significant minority of people in Iraqi Kurdistan who do not see independence as the primary issue facing the Kurdish population. And if we go to places like Syria and Turkey, which also have their own very active Kurdish movements, especially in Syria following the rise of the autonomous Rojava region, a region which during the a region in northeastern Syria, which during the civil war was taken over by the by Kurdish forces affiliated to the Turkish-based Kurdistan Workers Party. Those places, the idea of national self-determination as understood in terms of creating an independent nation and state are explicitly rejected. The PKK's jailed leader, Abdullah Öcalan, has advocated a system called democratic confederalism. And democratic confederalism is, I guess, just a fancy term for the idea of some kind of inter-ethnic federation, a kind of federation that would provide, according to the PKK and its supporters, a solution to ethnic conflict within Syria and other parts of the Middle East. So some of the leading Kurdish political parties explicitly reject national self-determination. So what does this tell us more generally about nationalism? Well, I think more generally, the key takeaway is this. When we look at national conflicts around the world, or ethnic conflicts around the world, we often end up assuming that the only solution is the ultimate solution, the best solution, and the only solution is division and partition of territory, the creation of new homelands and new states. However, what the Kurdish case tells us is that this is not always going to be the case. At times, you can reach compromise. There are ways of bringing communities together without breaking up the various states that exist around the world today. Now, that doesn't mean that in some cases partition might or might not be a good idea, but we should avoid generalizing and reducing nationalism and national questions to the issue of national self-determination and the creation of new nation states. There are a lot of states in the world in which different nationalities and communities can live side by side with each other. Countries like Switzerland, places like Canada, places like Britain. That doesn't mean there are no tensions, but it does mean that it is possible to solve national questions, or at least take the edge of national questions, without redrawing boundaries. Something which is all too often posited as the appropriate response to the problems facing the Middle East, as well as other parts of the world.
All right. Thank you, Gene, for the answer. So there you go. That is what we can learn from the Kurds about nation building. Now, if you would like to submit a question like that to me, you can go to historyunplugpodcast.com. There you'll find instructions, and I will be glad to answer anything that you can throw at me. Thanks for listening to the History Unplugged podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show to get your daily dose of all things history related, from ancient Greece to the Cold War. You can do that by going to historyonthenet.com/subscribe. Speaking of History on the Net, if you want to dive deeper, go to our site historyonthenet.com, and there you'll find blog posts, book reviews, and all of our other podcast episodes. Plus, don't forget to rate and review this podcast so we can bring you the best daily history content possible. We'll see you next time at the History Unplugged podcast.